You are tuned in to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome back to A Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is Tanis Helliwell. Tanis is the founder of the International Institute for Transformation, which offers programs to transform yourself, your work, and your world. Tanis teaches internationally at Christian, Buddhist, and holistic centers, as well as for government, universities, and businesses. She is the author of many books, Embraced by Love, Summer with the Leprechauns, and its sequel, Pilgrimage with the Leprechauns. And she also has a new DV called Elementals and Nature Spirits. You can sign up for her newsletter and find out more about her at www.tanishelliwell.com. So let's get her out now before the leprechauns play a trick on us. Hi, Tanis. How are you?
Hi, Lance. I'm well. And you?
I'm good. The leprechauns played a little trick on me before the show, but that's all right. I've recovered.
What happened to you?
Well, it's a personal. It was a bathroom issue.
Okay, say no more on air.
Yeah.
Tell me later.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I thought what we might do is begin with your own spiritual journey and how it took the turns which led you to meet the leprechauns in Ireland.
Well, I think I'd probably say that I've been a meditator since I was about 20 years old. So it's a long period of time that search for enlightenment and consciousness has been my main aim. And when I was about 20 years ago now, I gave up my 16-year relationship and my business and everything in order to actually become enlightened. And I went on a retreat to Ireland and rented a cottage sight unseen in a remote island called Achill Island off the west coast. And that is where, when I walked into that cottage, a very old cottage, I was greeted by a leprechaun and his family. And my life has really not been the same since.
I can imagine. Well, as it turns out, I, by the way, I've read both your books, and they are absolutely wonderful reads, and they are a delight to read. I recommend them highly to everyone. It turns out that the locals there told you there was something interesting about that, the lane that goes through the cottage as well, didn't they?
They did. When I went down to get some food in the day after I arrived, I was somewhat in shock, but I decided I would just continue and see how the summer would progress. And it's a tiny little town of Kiel, and there's one shop, which is the grocery store, the post office, the bank, and everything else. And the owner there, he said to me, so where are you staying? And I said, well, I'm staying in the Douglas Cottage. Oh, my God, he said, did you not know it's haunted? Well, I didn't want to let on, did I? Because, you know, I'd be the talk of the whole community. So I said, what? Haunted by what? As if I hadn't already had my own experience. And he said, oh, haunted by the little people. He said, in fact, you're living on a whole haunted lane. None of the locals go down that road at night. So it was well known by the locals about this particular cottage.
So now, did you actually meet them as you walked in? They made their presence felt. I mean, you actually saw them, right?
I do. Now, people often ask me, are they in third-dimensional reality like you and me? Mm-hmm. And I say to them that I have always, since a young child, I've been able to hear what people are thinking, and I have seen dead people, if you like, and other beings. So this runs in my family, which is Irish, and they call it having second sight. And for me, seeing the leprechaun is as clear as seeing you, if I were to see you. And to hear him is as clear. And a lot of people have actually seen him or seen other elementals. I actually have pictures, some in my DVD, and photographs, which I take to workshops, of actual fairies and elementals. But when people usually take a picture of me with my leprechaun friend, it turns out to be a gigantic blob of light. Now, I know that orbs are all very popular right now, but these aren't orbs. This, you know, this is as large a patch of light as if you, you know, you took a picture of your, from your neck down to your navel, right?
Now, just for our listening audience, could you give us some visuals on what they were wearing and how they presented themselves that first time?
Well, my leprechaun friend, who I call, or he likes to be called Lloyd, that's not his real name, but that's the name he goes by when talking to humans, and he is about 4 feet tall, and he wears, he's got larger than average feet, where he wears these big clunky shoes. He's got these heavy socks up to his knee and then Irish trousers on then. He's got a tight-fitting waistcoat, green waistcoat, and on his head he likes to wear a top hat. So he's quite the picture and definitely not in current style. And his mate, she, you know, usually dresses in clothes that are a good, you know, half a century out of style as well. Quite conservative.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, he was given an assignment to learn about the humans, wasn't he?
He actually chose it himself. He is a part of a group of elementals, or another word for them is nature spirits, to which brownies and elves and trolls and fairies belong. And his particular group are interested in working with humans around the world so that they can become conscious creators on this planet, because they feel that humans have done a terrible job, I can't help but agree about that, in looking after the planet. And so this is a relatively new group, Lance, that has only been going for just over 100 years. And my friend is that old. He, you know, they live longer than we do in our dimension.
And now they can pop up anywhere that they choose to, is that right? Anywhere in the world?
Yes, they can travel in space and time. They know what humans know about in theory. Humans know now that there is no such thing as space and time, and that this is some sort of construct. But we do have trouble with the actual experience of that knowledge, but they don't. They know that they can travel in the past, the present, the future. They can travel just by thought anywhere that they want. And this is becoming more and more obvious. There are avatars in the human world who do this, and we know this. And we're going to be doing this in this 21st century fairly soon, as in history's evolution.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that, and this is a good time to segue into it. because I know that you're involved with the International Institute for Transformation, and you're probably also aware of the numerous shifts and various ends of ages that we're going through now. What is your personal feeling about the transformations that we'll be going through and the timing of them, given all the prophecies and the Mayan calendar and the rest of it?
I'm very optimistic, and it's based on a deep-seated belief and trust that our Creator, whatever you want to call the being that has created this beautiful planet and solar system, mm-hmm. has in mind that we evolve and grow into consciousness and creators, and that we would not be set up to fail.
Right.
And so I believe that, yes, we are definitely going through a dissolution of the old forms.
Yes.
We can see this. You can see it. All of us can see it financially,
the wars,
and environmentally, socially.
Yes. On every level, we've taken about every wrong turn you can imagine.
We have,
yes.
But that's because we're only kindergarten creators, and the same laws don't apply to kindergarten, to children,
yes.
You know, as
that's
would
true.
Apply to full adults.
That's right. That's right. Well, so do you see this as a shift into, say, graduating from kindergarten to grade school, for instance, or a shift in consciousness in which we do become responsible for the planet and for ourselves?
I believe that that is our destiny,
yeah, yeah.
That humanity is to be a guardian of this planet and other species, and that we are creators, yes.
Well, we'd better get at it quickly because time is running out. We're running out of oceans and air and food. Not to mention other things. So,
On one level, this is absolutely true. And if we only look at our third dimensional reality,
mm-hmm.
which most of us seem to think is the only one,
mm-hmm.
We can't deny that everything's falling apart. But I've always seen things on other dimensions,
mm-hmm.
And even science now knows that there are at least 8 dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't science fiction. This is well known.
Right.
And so I believe in these other dimensions, there is great deal of optimism, and that we are actually, humanity's frequency is increasing, our vibration's increasing, we're becoming lighter, and we are moving into these higher dimensions.
Hmm.
Where we will be able to change just with one thought, a united thought, the reality that we find around us.
I agree with you. And even though there doesn't appear to be evidence to prove that, it seems that numerous guests on the show have talked about making a jump to the fifth dimension, and then we're beyond that. That's a kind of platform from which we will then ascend further.
Yes.
So it seems like a good possibility because this is something that happens periodically, and we've seen jumps in evolution in the past, and it seems about time that the butterfly gained its wings.
That's right. That's a nice image.
And then we could leave this third dimensional reality behind.
Yes, because it's the, I still think that there is in the fourth dimension, it's interesting that most of your guests talk about the fifth, because if we're talking about the fourth, which is one up from us now,
mm-hmm.
this is the realm of the of Armageddon, if you like, It is the hell realm. And this is the realm where we do need to overcome our fears and our greeds and prides and abusive thoughts and deeds. And as soon as we're able to do that, then yes, we do move into the fifth dimension.
So the fourth is the hell realm.
The hell realm is the equivalent of the fourth.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. I've heard that also.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, you're definitely reiterating what many seem to be saying, that is what we need to overcome to transform or transcend the fourth.
Yes, and really just to forgive ourselves. If we don't forgive ourselves what we've done, and you know, and just forgive others what they may have done, mm-hmm. this isn't going to help, because there is a whole bunch of energy used up in guilt and shame and blame,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and this energy needs to be moved into mm-hmm. Love, and that can only be done through deep forgiveness.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Yes, and that seems to be something that Christ taught thousands of years ago, and Buddha and the rest. So here it comes again.
That's right. It's like we've exactly, and I think that we've got it in theory, and now we just need to put it in practice. And that's why the elementals are really such wonderful examples, because for them, there is no gap between the thought mm-hmm. and the deed.
Mm-hmm.
What they think, they know that every thought they think manifests,
mm-hmm.
and they don't have doubt that they will be able to manifest what they want, you
mm-hmm.
see? So we can really just trust them in look at how they manifest a beautiful planet.
Yes, yes. And a flower. I mean, now most folks aren't aware that that everything has a natural spirit. Some people don't even think they have a spirit themselves.
Yes.
I mean, we do live in kind of the dark ages, it seems. But what are some of the different spirits as you understand them, such as elementals and devas, sprites, and so on? And They're elementals for the flowers and for the air. And could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yes. Just as we talk about the four elements, earth, air, fire, and water, there are different kinds of elementals that specialize in those elements. And one word for them, the air ones, would be sylphs. And they work with the large weather patterns around the world. They bring the rain. They also bring thunderstorms. They move clouds from one place to another. Then there's the undines, and they are the water elementals. They work with small little streams and waterfalls to the gigantic sage beings that are in the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And so those ones, we know, for example, that the earth itself is 75% water.
Mm-hmm.
And when a baby's born, surprisingly or not so surprisingly, it also is 75% water. Isn't that interesting? Yes.
Yes, very interesting.
So we are made up of the earth and the same composition as the earth. And the fire elementals are the gigantic beings that bring the energy from the sun to the earth that creates all life. And that's the energy of fire and spirit. It's also in our own bodies, in the kundalini energy, and moving along our nerves and into our brain. And the elementals that people usually see, however, are the earth elementals. And that's because earth is a more solid element. And so the earth elementals are more solid, so people see them more easily. Mm. And that would be the brownies and the trolls and the elves and the red caps and the little people is what most countries call them.
Now, can anyone see these at all, or are they specific to... I've heard that they're not as likely to be found in the big cities, that they tend to stay away from the big cities, but in the country where I live, how hard would it be for me to start tuning into these things?
And how even in the cities, there are still elementals. I live very near Vancouver in Canada. And there is a troll family that is the guardian of the forest, which are called the University of British Columbia's endowment lands. And it is a forested area, acres and acres, with lovely paths. And there is an actual troll family who I've been working with for many years that is a guardian of that section. And all trees, for example, have devas, which are the consciousness of those trees. And we know in cities that there are many trees. But even if people want to have a little garden, or they've only got an apartment and they want to just have a little, some few plants, we know that those plants have consciousness.
Yes, so anybody can really communicate with the spirit of the plant.
Absolutely. That wonderful book that came out about 20 years ago, The Secret Life of Plants. Peter Tompkins, I believe, was his name. And he was writing about all the scientific experiments that were done on plants and how they would have the exact, you know, two plants, exactly the same kind of plants planted at the same time. And one you go and think loving, positive thoughts to, and the other one you'd send hate and I don't like you. And yet you'd water them the same. And the difference in growth was remarkable.
Yes. Matsuru Emoto did the experiments with water, which indicated that the words change the vibration of water when it's turned into ice.
That's right. And because we are 75% water, that means... Literally, not only can we heal the water of our planet by our thought, but because we're 75% water, it affects us the same way. And if we send ourselves loving, kind, positive thoughts, that is also going to be healing us as well.
Yes, absolutely. Now... I have to mention that had it not been for my good friend Joy, I wouldn't have read your books. So, because she had raved about them, and
thank you, Joy.
And she has a question for you.
Okay.
It's mentioned in your first book that leprechauns are leery of dogs. Since I have so many cats around here, and I haven't sensed the elementals this spring summer season. I'm wondering if the elementals are leery of cats, too.
The answer is yes, Joy, because as the little ones are. In a house, there are some elementals that like to help people out in their houses. And in the older traditions, when more people lived on farms in Europe or even in North America, people used to leave out offerings to the elementals.
Oh.
And in Ireland, this was very typical, for example. And they'd leave out milk and they'd leave out part of the grain. And they knew that the elementals would be helping with the farm and they'd be helping with the house. Mm. And these are what used to be very small elementals. Brownies and red caps are really quite small. They're usually smaller than your knee in height.
Oh.
And they like to help out in homes and often live close to people. However, cats being the size they are, and those elementals being the size they are, the cats can see them as prey.
Oh.
And chase them, yes.
Oh, my.
Uh-huh.
Well, that certainly answers that question. Well, she also has 8 of the 15 feral cats are under the carport, and they're tamed, friendly, and even allow strays to come and eat.
Oh, that's nice.
How do the elementals feel about the friendly and the feral cats? I'm assuming that they probably are see them in the same light.
Well, it depends if they're chased by them.
Right.
You can sometimes watch cats. Cats can see other dimensions very easily. And if there's a ghost in the house, for example, cats will often notice and track it with their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're ever looking at a cat, even if the cat is not looking at you, it will turn and look at you. It can feel you looking at it.
Oh, yes, yes. Many times, yes. Are you there?
Yes, I am. So cats anyway do like to chase. They like to chase mice, of course, and
right.
birds, and small elementals. That doesn't mean that the elementals can't get away from them, but sometimes elementals, the smaller elementals, tease cats as well.
Mm-hmm.
But they have a sort of love-hate relationship sometimes.
Ah, okay. Now, in your second book, the word craic comes up. I thought you might shed some light on what the word craic means, and maybe you could give some examples during your travels of how that actually works.
Yes. The book you're referring to is my pilgrimage with the leprechaun.
Yes, yes.
Yes, where I took a group of 30 people to Ireland that wanted to meet elementals. And the tour got hijacked by my leprechaun friend Lloyd. And the word that you're referring to in Irish is pronounced crack.
Crack, okay.
Crack, yeah.
Okay.
Not crack cocaine, no. But it is pronounced crack.
Okay.
And I'll read just a little blurb from my book about it, if I could, because your audience might like that.
Oh, yes, that'd be wonderful.
Okay. So it's reading a little bit about crack, and it says, "It's not the destination so much as the focus of the journey that defines a pilgrim. And if you are traveling with a leprechaun and an assortment of other elementals, as we were doing, having a good sense of humor and a light heart is essential. The key to our pilgrimage in Ireland lies in understanding what the Irish call the crack. We journeyed through the crack and with the crack, and we were having the crack. Only the Irish can really understand the crack, and I often think that they invented it. It is hard to give you a definition of the crack, but a few words about it might point you in the right direction. The crack sums up all life's experience, the good and the bad, that which can be understood and that which cannot. The crack cannot be pinned down, and when you try to do so, it joggles you out of your comfort zone and laughs at you. It is both a great cosmic joke and cosmic joker. The crack is what lies between the this and the that. I often think of it as the crack between the worlds, between the three-dimensional reality in which humans spend their waking hours and other dimensions. The crack is magic. The crack is unpredictable and certainly not dependable. It comes whenever it wants, and it does whatever it can to move us into deeper knowing and truth. The only approach a sane person can take towards the crack is to surrender to it, as any resistance is futile.
Beautiful, beautiful.
So hopefully that will give your listeners some idea of the crack, because what we found and what I have found in working and playing with elementals for all these years is the more that you are attached to having things your way, the quicker and harder you're going to fall. And anyone who knows the Irish knows they've got a real black sense of humor, and they tend to laugh most at themselves and when things go awry.
Well, you had quite a bit go awry, didn't you, on that first tour, or on that the second tour with your second book?
Oh, my God, yes.
I mean,
you see, the whole thing came because, I mean, I've been in Ireland 13 times, and I've already led many tours before to Ireland, and, well, I've led tours for over 20 years all over the world, and I thought I was an expert, didn't I? You know, I was an expert in Ireland, I was an expert in leading tours, you know, it was just going to be like having a party. Well, that was my first mistake. And all these poor souls that thought they were going to just come on a vacation, that was their mistake as well, because they did say they wanted to experience the elementals, and, well, they got an experience. But, I mean, for people who haven't read the book, I mean, there's not much that went like it was supposed to. It was the tour from hell, But funny to say that, because I mean, I am an organized person, and I couldn't believe that half of the places that we were supposed to go to had been changed from when I left Canada to when I arrived in Ireland 2 days later. And, you know, half the places we were going to stay had also been changed by the tour company without me knowing. And the guide had one copy of the itinerary. I was given another copy. And then the bus driver had a third copy. And we didn't find out any of that until we met in Ireland the day of the tour starting.
Oh, my. And to top it all off, because you hadn't asked them for a bathroom key in advance, the bathroom was locked on the bus the entire time of the trip.
Absolutely. And that's typical Irish as well.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Oh, God, yeah.
Oh,
you
my.
Know, and I mean this for all your Irish listeners, I mean this, you know, really, a great sense of humor about it.
Yeah.
But it is typical that something like that would happen. And yes, there we are, 30 people on a bus and no bathroom. And yet we've got a beautiful bus with a bathroom on it. Instead, we're parking at a gas station and lining up 30 people for one toilet. Or heading into the bushes.
My goodness.
But it turned out that the bus driver actually owned the bus, and it was his new bus, and he didn't want to get it dirty.
Well, that makes sense. I understand that.
Oh, God. And, you know, the thing is that the group, when things started to go wrong, actually we did divide into sort of three groups. One was people who did laugh at it immediately and were starting to see the really ribald humor in everything, right? A second group were looking around for who to blame, you know, me or the tour company or the leprechauns, but definitely someone was to blame. And then the third group used to start off blaming, but you know, within a few minutes or an hour or so, they'd become converted to humor again. Yeah. And it is funny that even one of the people who objected the most and to everything that was happening, and the only person, in fact, who asked for her money back at the end of the tour, when she heard my new book was coming out, she was emailing me all the time saying, I can hardly wait to read it. You know, I've told everybody about it. It was the most wonderful tour in the world.
Oh, my goodness.
But that was not her experience at the moment.
Right, right.
But that's very human, you know. Humans love, the stories that humans love to tell are the stories where things went wrong.
Yes, yes. Well, now, one thing I found really fascinating is how brilliant the leprechauns are. They're almost genius at psychology, and their knowledge is all-encompassing, and their ability to teach in kind of an offhand way is quite amazing. I mean, you must have been startled at some of the lessons that you were taught by Floyd.
Well, one of the things that elementals, or especially leprechauns, like to do is they like to teach you non-attachment.
Mm-hmm.
And you know the stories. They are leprechauns really love to have a joke on you. And the stories that you read in fairy tales about you know, if you ever see a leprechaun, you've got to, you know, hold on to it and try to get his name from him. And if you get his name from him, he'll have to take you to his pot of gold. But you mustn't take your eyes off him, because if you do, he'll disappear and you'll end up with nothing. And he'll try to trick you again and again to take your eyes off him, right? So the stories about him being very clever, very wily, and loving to trick you and then laugh at you, this is typical of leprechauns, really. Mm. They've really got a mischievous sense of humor.
Mm. Well, now, there was a part in the book, too, where Floyd took you to meet some of the elders, the elder spirits. What were those?
Well, just like we have got different spiritual teachers, as you mentioned earlier, like a Buddha or a Christ, and people that we look up to, elementals also are evolving. And so there are very evolved elementals who are the teachers for elementals. And I was taken to four of those teachers, heads of the various elements, earth, air, fire, and water, mm-hmm. to be taught by them and also assessed by them regarding my commitment to serve the earth. And as you know, I somehow passed the test. But I wasn't just me passing the test. I had to defend all of humanity.
Yes.
And what we've been doing not in honoring the earth. Yes.
Well, how do we see that changing? We see so much in 3D that is intentionally being done to keep things as they are. It seems like it would almost require a major shift in consciousness or some kind of transformation for us to shift our thinking and grow in unity so that we actually can work together in spirit.
What what I'm feeling is happening is that we are moving there, and that a quantum jump is going to happen. For me, we either exist in fear or in love.
Right.
And if we're in fear, we contract and we diminish ourselves and others. Mm-hmm. And if we move into love, we also move into deep trust and deep faith and deep mm-hmm. optimism.
Mm-hmm.
And that is when we expand in consciousness and when we also believe that others are expanding as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I am a Pollyanna about this.
Mm.
I really believe that people are awakening to a sense of responsibility more and more on the earth.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And wanting, I believe that the majority of people, by far, want to feel good about themselves, want to feel good that they are contributing something in their life.
Mm.
And that the only drawback is that not everybody, in fact, perhaps only the minority, will sacrifice themselves in order to do that. So there's a bit of a struggle going on, I believe, with most humans currently around what their ego wants, which is a sense of security and safety and, you know, getting everything that the third dimensional world has to offer, and what their soul wants, which is to have to serve their purpose, which is to do something good for the earth. But gradually, I believe, and I wrote a book about this many years ago called Take Your Soul to Work. And in this book, I actually talked about people becoming soul-infused personalities, where we actually serve spirit, even though we've got a very distinctive personality.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, who's going to argue that the Dalai Lama has a totally different personality than a Mother Teresa, for example?
Oh, right.
And yet they both serve.
Right, right.
So it's not like we have to totally get rid of our personality. Our personality is a perfect tool.
Right.
Just like we're a guy or a girl and, you know, we're a certain height and we've got certain qualities. So it's our personality. It's a perfect tool to serve spirit. There's no accidents here.
Right, right. It's when ego runs amok and becomes attached to its desires that we get lost in the shuffle.
Yes, I think that's it. And it's not, often it's not until, unfortunately, this seems to be the way children burn, and we are children as far as creators go, that it's not until the pain becomes greater than the pleasure that we start to change.
Yeah.
And that is what's happened in our world now. We now are moving into more pain than pleasure. Even people who have it all, quotes, have it all. They've got enough money.
Yeah.
They've got a good job. They've got a nice car. They're still not happy. That's pain.
Yes.
And that will cause a change.
Yes, yes. And I see that more and more happening. Just it just seems obvious in, if you even scan the daily news that that this is something that's becoming worse, that money and possessions are not going to make you happy. There's no, and more money and more possessions aren't going to make you happy. Different possessions aren't going to make you happy. It's a soul journey. It's a spiritual journey. Excuse me. And that is where true happiness comes, when you learn how to be of service, rather than to be one that takes and takes and takes and is self-serving. And we see, well, you can see the you can see that we're playing out in the banking industry and the oil industry and the pharmaceutical industry and corporations and It's just like rape and pillage.
Yes,
and it's
exactly.
Never enough. It's never enough.
And it's leading to a collapse of the old system. And as the system starts to collapse, people are realizing they cannot trust their bankers. They
right.
cannot trust their religious leaders.
Right.
They cannot trust anyone outside of themselves.
Yes.
So they have to go with their own inner conscience.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
And this will cause people to grow up.
Yeah.
Let's not look outside of ourselves for someone to save us. Let's realize that each of us has a responsibility to step forward.
Mm, yes, absolutely. You know, we are our own, we have to be our own fathers and mothers in a sense.
Yes.
Many of us came from dysfunctional childhoods. And our parents were not really functional, so we were left at, the age of 8 or 9. So we actually have to be our own parents, literally. And that can be a difficult job when you have such terrible role models all over the world. But it can be done.
But it can be done. And this is the... this is the thing to remember, and there are enough role models of people who are doing it.
Yes.
And it's never too late either. You know, this thing about, well, oh, I'm too old to change, or I've failed too many times to ever succeed. I mean, this is garbage. that might be... I mean, we see people changing on their deathbed, right?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
You know, yes. So I always say, let's die before we actually die. You know, let's
right.
let that old part die so that we could actually use some productive years to get on
right.
with it.
Right. Well, some people suggest we do our life review as soon as possible so that we can move on. You know, that people have near-death experiences, have a life review on the other side. Well,
yeah.
There are those who come back, they say, well, do it now. Have your life review. Do your life review. Examine your life and for what it is and tell yourself the truth and then move on.
Exactly.
And accept it all as it is and don't judge yourself. And that's the way, and forgive yourself for those things that you feel you did wrong.
And yes, I'm with you. I'm with you fully on that, Lance.
Yeah, yeah. So, this is a school of learning, but like I said, it does seem that time is running short. And but maybe we're being pressed against the wall, and change is something that happens when we are pressed, like a diamond becomes a diamond when it's heated to a certain point.
Yes, and I remember Maharishi, who founded TM, he always said that if only 1% of people meditated, that the whole consciousness of humanity would click over, right, into a higher state.
Mm-hmm.
And I really believe that this is what is happening.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to get to 100% of people shifting. It's a relatively small amount of people will actually shift the consciousness of the entire race.
Like the 100th monkey.
Like the 100th monkey. That's right.
Yeah.
And you can see how the spiritual books, for example, are the largest growth industry
in
books.
Yes.
Well, why is that? Or someone like an Oprah, and look at what she has done.
Well, we've been in a spiritual desert. We've been kept it seems that it's been ignored for quite a few years, and we just have reached a point where we can no longer, we can't go on like this. We've reached the end of the line in terms of what we can do in the material world. It's time to turn away from the material world and you know, work on the spiritual realms. The material world will take care of itself.
I think that's true. A lot of people, when I'm doing workshops, it's very, very common for people to say that they just can't keep up anymore, and that there's too many changes, too much pressure, too much stress, too many rules and regulations by the government, and you know, and forms to fill out here, there, and everywhere, and they just cannot keep up. And it's this domino effect where people are starting to crumble under this pressure. You can see that in the States with what happened to your whole housing market. And when you have the weaker ones who crumble, then it falls to the middle group that used to be able to do it, but now they can't do it anymore, and so they start to crumble, and then there's just the very few who can still hold the system together, and pretty soon that's going to crumble too.
That will crumble too, yeah.
That will crumble too. Yeah. So we're really moving into a time of the unknown and a time of chaos. Now, people fear chaos because it isn't known, it's unpredictable, and yet from chaos, it's where we're going to birth new experiments and new ways of doing things. And we just have to be kind to ourselves and others, I think, as we go into this period of chaos and not look for the ultimate answer, but just say, I'm experimenting.
Right.
I'm doing the best I can. I'm an experiment, and you're an experiment. We're experimenting here.
Right, exactly. Let's have fun with it.
Let's have fun with it. And the Buddhists have a wonderful expression. It's, you know, that we just have to show that we have right motivation for our actions.
Mm-hmm.
And that is all any of us can say. You know, I say, you know, to people, you know, I don't need to be perfect. All you need to see is that I am doing the best I can and I have right motivation for my actions.
And that's something only we can know.
That's right. That's right. And other people, as they get to know us, they learn to trust that as well.
Right, right. When they can see that your intent is good. And consistently good, that it's not selfish and you're not manipulating and you're not lying or greedy or corrupt, then, you know, they begin to realize that, yes, that's somebody you can count on. But they keep their word, and when they give it to you, you know it's good, it's solid.
That's right. And if we also are not defending our weak areas, but perfectly, you know, I just come right out and say what I'm not good at and
exactly.
I don't know something, I've got nothing to, you know, so then people could tell that if I say I do know something, I've already admitted what I don't know.
Right. I like that. I love people like that because then you know they're telling the truth.
That's right.
You know, and it makes it so much more fun anyway. I love it when people admit their faults. One thing that I wanted to ask you, I'm going to throw this out there. Now, when you first went to this beautiful little cottage in Ireland that you didn't know was haunted and was on a haunted lane and filled with leprechauns, you went, your purpose, your intent, was to gain enlightenment.
Yes.
Tell us what happened to that intent, and have you gained enlightenment since?
Oh, boy, that's a really interesting question. Dare I tell the absolute blanket truth on air?
Yes.
What happened was, I said at the end of the book that I did not become enlightened. What I did not say, that is the truth, but what I did not say is that it was because they did not consider that I would stay on the earth and continue to serve and help if I became enlightened. I would choose to leave.
Oh.
And at that moment, they didn't feel that my commitment to stay was strong enough for me to become enlightened.
Oh, my. Isn't that...
That is no longer a difficulty, let's say, in my life.
Yeah.
I am totally committed and have been for many years. So, but at that time, they needed me more here than to leave. And I believe that that isn't just my story, that there are a lot of people who in another time would become enlightened, but this isn't the time for it. This is the time to stay here and function.
Mm-hmm.
Drive our cars, pay our taxes,
mm-hmm.
write our books, go to work, and do the best we can.
Yes, very good answer. Very good. I would never even have thought of that. There are so many people that are holding the space for others to gain information, such as yourself, and I think each one of us is so vital, even the ones that don't appear to be doing anything visibly. They might just be washing dishes or working at a McDonald's or something, but they're here holding a vibration that is necessary.
Absolutely.
So each one of us is valuable in that sense. So
absolutely, and we can't judge, we cannot know by looking at the outside package of a person.
That's right.
How they are serving.
Absolutely right. Well, Tanis, this has been an absolutely wonderful conversation, and we're almost at the end of the hour, so I wanted you to have a chance to mention any your website and your books or any places where you'll be appearing and before we get off the air.
Well, my two books, Summer with the Leprechauns and Pilgrimage with the Leprechauns, if people are interested. I've got a new one coming out, Lance, probably in about another month or two, called Decoding Your Destiny, Keys to Humanity, Spiritual Transformation.
Oh, good.
And, so it's actually it's about what we've just been speaking on. So that's very interesting. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
And I am doing a workshop on elementals in Vermont, Cali, Vermont, on October 1st and 2nd. And the name of the organizer, her name is Gail England. I'll give the phone number in case anybody's interested, 802-223-1730. And people can go on either my Tanis Hellowell website or the International Institute for Transformation website. And thank you for having me on. It's been a wonderful time talking with you. And once we hang up, you can tell me about the bathroom experience.
Oh. I'll relay that psychically, if you don't mind.
Okay. Okay.
All right. And come back anytime, Tanis. I can't wait to read your next book, and I loved both of your Leprechaun books. They were wonderful.
Oh, thanks, Lance.
All
good
right.
work you're doing. Thanks again.
Thank you, and good night.
Good night.